The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Welcome to the Washington College of Law Office of Student Affairs. My name is Laura Hartz. I'm the Senior Academic Counselor here at the Law School. Today, in conjunction with a first responder training here at WCL put on by Amy Gordon of the DC Rape Crisis Center, we now have the opportunity to have an in-depth interview with Ms. Gordon about her work with the DC Rape Crisis Center, and to also share with the community some information that they may find useful, either personally or professionally, or to help a friend in a situation where they may have been sexually harassed or sexually abused. Ms. Gordon, why don't you go ahead first and tell us a little bit about your work at the DC Rape Crisis Center and how long you've been there.
Sure. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I started work at the DC Rape Crisis Center relatively recently. I began there in July, this past July, and I work in the Crisis Services Office at the center. I'm the SANE Hospital Advocate, which means that along with my colleagues in the Crisis Services Department, we staff with volunteers and staff members the 24-hour hotline and the 24-hour advocacy services at the Crisis Center. I also go out and do presentations and trainings and a number of other things that, you know, it's a very egalitarian office.
So would it be right to assume if you staff a 24-hour hotline that there is no time that that hotline isn't staffed?
There is no time that that hotline isn't staffed. Right now, our hotline is just one line. So if you call the hotline and it's busy, it rings busy, that does not mean that it isn't staffed. It just means that it is indeed at use at the time. So you can always call back. The hotline number is 202-333-7273. And that is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week you can call it. And the vast majority of the time, we get to talk to a real person. Our counselors that you're talking to are staff members and community members that have at the very least 65 hours of training on counseling for these subjects, and oftentimes they have a lot more experience because they've either been working for us for a long time or volunteering for us for a long time. We also do continuing education with our volunteers and our staff members on the hotline.
Ms. Gordon, could you tell us what the mission of the DC Rape Crisis Center is?
Sure. The DC Rape Crisis Center, not one to be outdone by hyperbolic missions, has the mission of ending sexual violence everywhere. But the way I like to think about it in a more digestible bit is that we're really just working to reduce the amount of violence in the world every day. So that's everything from helping people that have been victims of violence to, being a proactive bystander. And if you notice violent behavior around you or situations in your community that seems to encourage violent behavior, feeling comfortable stepping in and letting people know that, you know, that's not okay and that there are other ways to address problems or, to treat different people.
Wonderful. Thank you. What resources does the DC Rape Crisis Center have for survivors of sexual assault and harassment?
We have a lot of resources. I've already mentioned our 24 hours a day, 7 days a week hotline, and we encourage everybody and anybody to call that. You don't have to be a primary survivor of sexual assault, and even if you are, it doesn't have to have happened recently. You can call the hotline if you've had experiences from a long time ago, and you can also call the hotline if you're a secondary survivor. So if you're somebody who has a close family or friend that has experienced any kind of sexual assault, we encourage you to call the hotline. We also had advocacy, so if you or somebody you know has experienced a sexual assault, within 96 hours, you can go to Washington Hospital Center. You can bring yourself there, or if you call our hotline, we can get you a cab there, or you can call the police, go to Washington Hospital Center, and then you can get an forensic exam specifically for sexual assault cases, or you can just get medical attention, and you do not need to report to the police to do these things. Even if you don't report to the police, you can have a DC Rape Crisis Center advocate who will be automatically dispatched to Washington Hospital Center when you go there. So those are our crisis services opportunities that we have. We also have counseling. Our counselors are awesome. We have group counselors, we have adult individual counselors, we have child and family counselors, and we also have counseling available if you are a secondary survivor of somebody who has experienced a sexual assault. And Our counseling is really great, and it's really, really free. Mm-hmm. We also have community educators. So if you work in a school or if you work in a different community center, we have community educators that come out and do work with children. We have good touch, bad touch presentations for infants or little people in like preschool and kindergarten, and a number of different things. We do presentations all over the community, and obviously if you have any ideas about any other services that DC Rape Crisis Center could provide or any other collaborations, you should feel free to contact us.
Terrific, thank you. You had mentioned before that you can have, I believe, go to the ER and have the SANE exam within 96 hours. Could you explain what the significance of the 96-hour mark is?
Yes, of course. The SANE exam, in addition to providing you with HIV prophylaxis, which can prevent or help decrease the likelihood of HIV transmission during an assault, and Plan B, which can help decrease the likelihood of pregnancy occurring because of the assault, we also do evidence collection during the SANE exam. And that evidence collection is really only going to be able to happen within 96 hours because that's the period of time in which evidence can be found on the human body. After 96 hours, and, you know, frankly, the closer you get to the end of 96 hours, the less likely we're going to be able to find any evidence. And so there's really, you know, no point in going through something so traumatic as a SANE exam, which involves a pelvic exam as well as photographs sometimes. You're not going to want to go through all of that necessarily if you're not going to be able to get any evidence from it. If you just wanted to receive medical attention after 96 hours, that's absolutely a great idea, and you should do so at any hospital. But if you do want to collect evidence, it's really important that that happens within 96 hours, that you do not shower if you can help it, that you don't go to the bathroom if you can help it, and that you don't eat or drink anything if you could help it, and that you keep your original clothing on if you can help it. Obviously, if you've gone to the bathroom or changed your clothes, it's still very important if you want to come in. And you can get the SANE exam and the evidence collected without speaking to the police, after which you have 90 days to decide whether or not you want to talk to police about what's happened to you, and make a report. If you decide not to report, your kit will be destroyed after 90 days. If you decide to report, then you could decide to report on day 89, and we can save the kit.
So persons going to Washington Hospital Center for a SANE exam aren't necessarily saying that they're committing to pressing charges or reporting the crime, but it leaves the option open if you decide within that 90-day window that it is something you want to pursue. Is that right?
Yes.
Thank you. Let's see, what else do we have for you? I think we've kind of gone through that. Here's an interesting question, and I know this came up today in our talk, but I found the answer interesting, so why don't we go through it again. Do you ever see male survivors of sexual assault at the DC Rape Crisis Center?
We definitely do. We see more female survivors than male survivors, but we definitely see a lot of people who identify as male survivors of sexual assault at the DC Rape Crisis Center. We have a male survivors counseling group, and they're obviously have opportunities to get individual counseling at the center with male counselors and female counselors and or female counselors. We also see a lot of males on our advocacy calls. It can be really hard, as many barriers as there are in society for anybody to come forward and talk about sexual assault. I think that there are extra barriers for men to come forward and talk about sexual assault just because of, you know, expectations of masculinity in addition to, you know, I think a lot of people don't recognize that it's possible for men to be sexually assaulted. More often than not, the perpetrators of sexual assault are men, even if a male is the survivor, is the victim of the sexual assault. And what we see is of all the reported sexual assaults, of all the people that report being sexually assaulted, about 10% are men. So it's always a little fuzzy because it's tough to get really good statistics on sexual assault reports, but we know, you know, 10% is quite significant, and it's definitely something that isn't talked about a lot, but we see plenty of them on advocacy calls, and they should feel free, if you are a man and if you are a victim of sexual assault, to come forward and to access counseling resources, and if it's within 96 hours and you're interested in evidence collection or medical care, to come to a hospital, because at Washington Hospital Center, with our SANE program there, you'll get a DC Rape Crisis Center advocate, and you will absolutely be believed and, you know, treated appropriately.
Thank you. Based on that, I have, I think, perhaps a two-part question. I know earlier today we discussed something called rape trauma syndrome, and so maybe you could go ahead and define that for our listeners now. And I'd also like to know if you see rape trauma syndrome in men just like you would in women who come to the DC Rape Crisis Center.
Rape trauma syndrome, which I spoke about earlier today, is what some, not all, but some survivors of sexual assault may be experiencing if they come and talk to you. It is in many ways similar to post-traumatic stress disorder. It can be, and it presents a lot of times with a lot of anxiety, a lot of sleeplessness, trouble with relationships, problems focusing, depression. It can be hard to relate. It can just be hard to function. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that you may be, again, it manifests in different ways, but you may be reliving a lot of the experience. It's called rape trauma syndrome because a trauma is any time when you feel as though your life, that your livelihood is threatened. So objectively, I might hear about somebody's experience and think, oh, well, yeah, that's kind of scary, but it doesn't sound like their life was in danger. Or they were always going to live through that, or they were always going to remain fairly bodily intact through that. But to them, they might have felt like that was it, that they were, you know, in a really, really scary place, that their life was endangered. And that can really impact somebody, and it can manifest as rape trauma syndrome with all the symptoms that I spoke about before. At the same time, somebody might not manifest with a lot of symptoms. They might be experiencing and re-experiencing their assault and going to really bad places, but outwardly they might seem totally chipper and fine. So it can be tough to know, you know, if your friend is coming forward and telling you about something, you just want to make sure that you're believing them no matter what, because they could, you know, seem all rape trauma syndrome really in a bad place, or they might be kind of laughing about it. And either way, it's still a serious thing, and it's still a really big deal that they were able to tell you, and it's great that they were able to tell you. We definitely see men come forward with rape trauma syndrome manifesting in some similar ways, but it can, like I mentioned before, just be harder for men to feel like they can come forward in general. They might be feeling really depressed, but they might not even recognize that what happened to them was a sexual assault. And even if they do recognize that what happened to them was wrong and was a sexual assault, they might not feel like they can come talk to anybody about that, because they might not recognize that others will see it that way. So it's complicated, but we definitely see that men suffer from having been assaulted in many of the same ways that women do.
Thank you. I'm wondering now, does the DC Rape Crisis Center have any resources for survivors of domestic violence?
We end up talking to a lot of people that are survivors of domestic violence. If they have just experienced an acute incident, then we can be seeing them at the hospital maybe. And if they are calling our hotline, we'll be talking to them on the hotline. So we end up talking to a lot of people in crisis services about being in domestic violence situations. I don't know as much about the counseling that we do and the specific like percentages of what clients we see, but I do know that we see some clients that are in domestic violence relationships. And from our angle, we'll try and help with temporary housing if they are looking to leave at that time, especially if we're interfacing with them at the hospital and they need to get out from where they are and to go somewhere else. Then we'll try to help them with emergency temporary housing through crime victims compensation. But more often than not, when we do see people that are in domestic violence relationships, we hook them up with other resources, such as House of Ruth in D.C. is a big one, or other shelters in the area. We'll hook them up through that. We also use, as I mentioned, crime victims compensation through the Office of Victim Services at the mayor's office a lot to help people with different resources. Something that's just more fraught about those situations is that if somebody isn't ready to leave a domestic violence relationship, then it's very unsafe, frankly, to encourage them to do so if they don't feel like it's the right time for them. So, you know, we'll provide counseling, and we talk to them quite a bit on our crisis services, but it's a population that's a little harder to help until they're really coming to you wanting that help right then.
What opportunities, if any, are there for community organizations or schools in the D.C. area to partner with D.C. Rape Crisis Center?
D.C. Rape Crisis Center loves to do presentations. So if there are any community organizations out there who are interested in learning more about this topic, related topics, and how it impacts their organization, D.C. Rape Crisis Center you know, would love to do partnerships like that. We've worked in the past with, you know, different centers that deal with different vulnerable populations. Homeless shelters in particular come to mind, where we just go and do presentations and give people some space to talk about, you know, after they've had a little education, some of the stuff that's happened to them and what they would like to do about it at that time. Schools, our community education department does wonderful presentations at a lot of schools. Does wonderful presentations at a lot of schools, and they work with kids of all ages, all different kinds of vulnerable populations, to help educate them about, you know, sexual assault and what's going on with them and best ways they can deal with it. We do something called SAS Clubs, which stands for Sister Action, Sister Strength, at area high schools, where you get women at the high schools together to talk about stuff that's on their mind and is of concern to them. So, you know, any opportunities like that, if anyone's interested in them, talking to DC Rape Crisis Center, because we can get together and do that.
Thank you. I apologize for the sound of the phone ringing. I'm just so busy. In addition to the sort of partnering that we might be able to do with DC Rape Crisis Center, if there are people who have financial resources to give, is DC Rape Crisis Center accepting those sorts of donations, or like in-kind donations of clothing, toiletries, those sorts of things?
Yes. To start with the clothing, even though we're not a domestic violence shelter, at the hospital during the SANE exam, which is the forensic exam at the hospital, more often than not, the survivor has all their clothes taken away, which is really a downer. And then when they're leaving later, it's just really undignified to not have clothes on, especially after you're coming in having been sexually assaulted. We have some resources now, some clothing that we've been able to get from different businesses and companies to send people home with, but we are really low on pants. And again, we try to give people back as much control and as much power over their situation, and something as small as pants really isn't that small when it comes to feeling better after something like this has happened to you as you're getting home afterwards. So we accept donations. The clothing has to be new and in original packaging or with tags, which is a little rough because I know a lot of people very kindly always want to donate clothing that's even lightly used. And we're specifically looking for pants and undergarments and socks and shoes, but mostly pants. In terms of money, DC Rape Crisis Center is interested in that. We accept donations, and if you call our business line at 202-232-0789, you can talk to our development director, and his name is John Madigan, and he's amazing, and talk about any kind of fundraising ideas you have, or if you are interested in making a donation. DC Rape Crisis Center does a ton of work every year with our presentations, with our clients. We have around 100 volunteers who donate a lot of time every year, and any support that anyone wanted to give is much needed and much appreciated.
One question, and I don't mean this to sound silly, with regard to the pants. Are you looking for pants in various sizes, or are we talking more about sweatpants that would fit anybody?
We're looking for all of the above. So if you have pants in different sizes, that's much appreciated. If you are a business or a company that's looking for the most kind of cost-effective way to donate clothing, definitely sweatpants have a more one-size-fits-all appeal. And people are really wearing this clothing home. We're not looking to give them, like, clothing that they'll cherish forever because they're probably just going to wear it home and then want to burn it. So sweatpants are great and, again, very practical, but if you have pants of different sizes, that's wonderful as well.
Well, thank you very much, Amy Gordon. It's been a pleasure chatting with you today. If you could just give the hotline number once more to our listeners, I think, unless you have anything to add, I think I can let you go now.
Great. Our hotline number is 202-333-7273, and our business line is 202-232-0789. And so the business line is available during business hours, and you can call it to request counseling. Or if you have questions about fundraising, about gift giving, or any of our services, calling the business line is incredibly appropriate. Calling the hotline you can also do if you have more practical questions, or if stuff is coming up for you and you need to talk, it's a 24/7 hotline. Thank you very much.